This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 134.
Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where it's all about empowering you to run a marathon and change your life. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we bring you the case for core training, how focusing on your body's core muscles will make you a more efficient runner. And for this episode's quick tip, our recommendation for cold weather running gloves. And to get our help in your training, find out how to become an Academy member, to go through our courses, and interact with our awesome online community by visiting MarathonTrainingAcademy.com and clicking on the Join the Academy page. So, Angie, you are still on a running streak from last Thanksgiving, right?
Yes, I am. Tomorrow will be day 100.
Oh, man. So what is wrong with you?
We shouldn't be asking what is right with me.
No, that's awesome. So how's it going? I mean, it's not getting old yet. You're running every day. You haven't taken a break at all for the last 100 days.
That's right.
And you're not injured.
Nope.
You're not getting sick of it.
No, I'm actually enjoying it. It's been a challenge. I mean, like today I woke up and there was a fresh 6 to 8 inches of snow and ice underneath that.
Yeah.
And our road hadn't been plowed, so I kind of gingerly ran as much as I could. And
that's a tromp. That's not a run. That's a tromp.
Yes, it was. It was a slog. But yeah, it's been a challenge, but I've been enjoying it.
Have you seen any other payoff from doing this?
I think my body is really rising to the challenge.
Cool.
I feel like my legs are, you know, recovering faster. And you know, obviously I'm doing a lot of these runs at a very easy pace. And some days I'm not running more than a couple miles. You know, so it's not like I'm just running high miles, intense,
sure,
100% kind of thing.
So the New York City Marathon lottery has settled and you try to get in, but you're not going to be going this year.
No, for the second year in a row, I was rejected.
No New York City Marathon for us this year.
Not this year. I wasn't really holding my breath because there is a fairly low chance that you get in. I think it's like 11% or something.
So how do you ever get in? Does the percentage go up the more times that you enter?
No. I mean, it used to be if you entered a certain number of times, then like the fourth year, you would get in automatically, but they took that away. So my
wow.
My kind of philosophy has been, I'm just going to enter until I eventually get selected and then I'll run it. So yes, congratulations to everyone who got in, and we'll be doing that this year. And someday it'll be my turn. And I'm okay with that because there's a lot of other great fall marathons that I can choose from.
Well, we have the Boston Marathon coming up. Angie's going to be running that, but her and I both are going to be traveling there, and we are planning an MTA meetup on the Saturday before the Boston Marathon. If you're going to be in the area and like to come hang out with us and have lunch, shoot us an email. You can send it to trevor@marathontrainingacademy.com.
That's right. That'll be Saturday, April 18th. And you can also go to our Facebook page, and we've created an event, and you can join the event over there. All right, I'd like to read a few notes that we got here. This one says, "Morning, guys. I've been listening to your podcast for the last couple of months and really enjoy them. I realized that especially this morning, because I'm in New Hampshire on business, and it's way too cold to run outdoors, so I hopped on the hotel treadmill. I hate treadmills and was not into it until I turned on your latest podcast and was carried away. It kept me going, and I could have run all morning. Thanks, and keep up your interesting mix of life stories, running stories, advice, and fun." And that's from Mitch.
Well, thank you for that email, Mitch. I'm glad we helped you get through that treadmill run. I just don't have the attention span to run very long on a treadmill. I think like 5 miles is the furthest I've ever gone. What about you? What's the longest treadmill run you've ever done?
I think I've done 13 maybe.
See, that's just torture right there.
Well, when there's a will, there's a way. You got to get your training in.
That's true. So kudos to all of you keeping it real on the treadmill.
And this final note from Facebook says, "Thank goodness I got an email about the latest podcast. I had thought about skipping my training run today because I was feeling tired, but I figured I could do a recreational run and listen to the podcast. Well, 20 minutes in, I started into my threshold part, and I laughed so much at the part about releasing the Kraken that I didn't even see that 10 minutes had gone past. If your sister ever wants to come to Ireland, give me a shout. I ran the Dublin Marathon for the first time last year, and it was my best marathon to date, and third one in total. Keep up the great work, and I look forward to your next podcast." And that comes from Stephanie in Ireland.
Well, thank you for that nice email, Stephanie. I'm glad that we gave you just a little extra push to get out there and get your run done. And enjoy a few good laughs at Autumn's expense.
That's right.
Well, now we're going to get into our feature segment, and we're going to dive deep into something that's just vital for doing marathon training the right way. Andy's going to really throw down the content on this one, so I know you're going to love it. Let's go ahead and get into our discussion on core training right now. Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. So now we want to talk about core training to make you a stronger runner. The case for core training. Angie, are you a hardcore runner?
I guess it depends on who you ask.
Well, you already are a hardcore gangster, so I thought, you know, hardcore runner is just the next step after that, right?
Whatever.
So what is core training and why does it matter?
Well, if you've been around the running world for any length of time, you've probably heard the term core and core training thrown around quite a bit. In fact, obviously, we're sitting here talking about it today, and I think there are probably hundreds of articles out there talking about the importance of core training. I just saw a couple on Facebook this morning. However, it can be challenging to add one more thing to your busy schedule if you don't really see the importance of how it directly relates to your success in running. I mean, running is the fun part, and sometimes the other exercises are not so much. They kind of seem like obligatory or, you know, something you do because you have to. And if you don't have a good reason for doing them, then it's really easy just to skip that part of your training.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about first what weak core muscles are like, and then we can talk about how to get stronger core muscles and the benefits of them.
Well, let me ask you this. What precipitated an episode about core training? Why did you decide to put this together?
Well, I was recently at a coaching class, and they talked about core training and gave a really good illustration that I thought resonated well. And it's something that I prescribe for all my coaching clients. But I see that a lot of them, you know, skip one to two of their core workouts per week. You know, it kind of seems to be the thing that often falls by the wayside. And I understand because people are busy, and I've done the same thing in the past too. So I thought, let's really dig into this topic so people can see the importance of it. And maybe it's something you've never thought about before. Maybe it's something that you know you should be doing. Maybe you already have a good core training routine and you're totally ahead of the game. But I thought it would just be a really interesting topic because it's going to help us become better runners.
So you prescribe core training for your clients and they skip them.
Not all of them skip them.
You know, folks, you can multitask. You can get down in plank position right now and hold it until Angie's done talking. Ready to go.
Good luck with that. Kind of think about, maybe you've had the feeling of soreness in your lower back or your shoulders or your hips during long runs.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of think, oh, it's, you know, so miserable. I hurt here or there. Well, this feeling can directly be related to weak core muscles. And I can speak from personal experience here because I've definitely felt that during marathons. And when I resumed running after having our last son, my core muscles were really weak. I mean, probably the consistency of Jell-O, just to be honest. You know, if you have a baby, it's really even hard to pull your abdominal muscles in tight. It's just not much going on there because they've been stretched out so much.
Yeah, she's not kidding. I remember poking your stomach. This doesn't sound very nice, but there was nothing. I mean, I am trying to flex. There's just no muscle there right now.
Exactly. And so that's the extreme of having weak core muscles. And many women in the audience are nodding their heads. Yes, they've been there. Men, if you've never been there, thank your lucky stars that you're not a woman and have to go through pregnancy and childbirth. But that's definitely one end of the spectrum. And I remember having to build my base back, and during long runs, it literally felt like my guts were going to fall out, which is not a nice feeling or a nice visual. It just felt like everything was so loose that, you know, my running form really was not very good at all. And it took concentrated effort over a series of weeks and months to build back my strong core and to notice improvements in my running. And I like to think of this as the SpongeBob effect. And this was the example I got at the coaching class. So everyone knows of the guy who lives in a pineapple under the sea, right?
SpongeBob SquarePants.
That's right.
Absorbent and yellow and porous is he.
Definitely.
And if nautical nonsense is just what you wish.
It's not. So let's stop.
Sorry. You had to start it.
He's part of my example. So if your core is soft and spongy, porous and yellow even, then when you run, the impact gets absorbed by your core and it takes more effort to propel you forward. Plus, then you're at a greater risk for having back problems and other injuries farther down the kinetic chain. But on the other hand, if your core muscles are nice and tight and strong, like a properly inflated basketball, when you take a step, you're going to bounce forward more easily and you're going to use your energy more effectively.
So what the instructor said was you could either have a core like a sponge or core like a basketball. That's a helpful example because, you know, if you dribble a basketball, if it's inflated properly, it just shoots up as soon as it hits the ground, right? It bounces back up, and that's all that energy is going up and out instead of like a sponge where the energy is just getting absorbed into itself.
Yeah, if you drop a sponge, it just splat, you know. That's all you have going. And, you know, maybe you feel like that when you're running sometimes, like splat, 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 instead of bounce, 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 bounce.
So you're saying if you got the bounce effect because of tight core muscles, it takes less energy in your legs to have to push yourself forward.
Exactly. We all know that training for a marathon requires a significant time investment. And so many of us in the past or currently make the mistake of not focusing on exercises that are going to balance and strengthen our running muscles. So that's why I really feel like building core strength is an essential element to running effectively, since it's going to directly improve your running form and decrease your chances of injury.
So Angie, what exactly are the core muscles?
I'm glad you asked. The core muscles are the stabilizing muscles for your spine and your lower body. And the core muscles include the muscles that attach to your pelvis, your abdominal muscles, and your back. And I'll give you a few technical terms, but the core muscles are the gluteal complex, often called your glutes, which consist of the gluteus maximus, medius, and minimus. There is the hamstring muscle, the muscle that runs down the back of your leg, the quadriceps, the hip adductors, hip flexors, spinal erectors, the internal obliques, the external obliques, latissimus dorsi, because it attaches to the lower back and it's considered a core muscle, and then finally the rectus abdominis, which is the muscle that everyone refers to as the six-pack muscle.
Is that what they refer to as Tyrannosaurus rectus?
I have no idea. So, you know, people think core muscles, they often think they're abdominal muscles, you know, the ones you can see, the ones you try to get a six-pack in, but that's only a small picture of what your core muscles are. So since the core is the foundation for running and all movement, core conditioning is basically a workout technique that focuses on those muscles that I just mentioned, and the job of your core is to provide stability and strength for movement of the body. And if you think about it, our spine contains the central nervous system, which controls how effectively we move our arms and legs. So if you have strong supportive muscles for your spine, it's really going to help efficiency of movement. And runners really need to have a strong, stable base to operate efficiently, so they're more like a basketball and less like a sponge. The core muscles function in different ways. Rotational and lateral movements are a major component of core strengthening. And as runners, we primarily move in one plane from front to back. And we often neglect the training of our rotational and lateral strength. So if you're only doing exercises that focus on going forward, then you're ignoring a lot of muscles that help you become a well-rounded runner. So the strength that you gain from some lateral or some side-to-side motion adds strength and stability to your body. Although it doesn't really seem that obvious, your gait demands rotational strength and flexibility. And runners can lose some rotational range of motion and lateral strength if you don't focus on well-rounded conditioning. And this can lead to injuries like iliotibial band syndrome, which very commonly plagues runners. So we've kind of talked a little bit about why core training is so important. It really provides your body at a basic level with a solid foundation, gives your legs more strength, and it increases your running efficiency. And the more strength the muscles connected to the pelvis have, the more solid the foundation of movement through your legs. Really, if you look at it, your pelvis, your knee, and your ankle joints all work together. So if your pelvis is stable, then more force is going to be applied from the foot to the ground when you have your foot strike. But if the pelvis lacks stability when you're running, then there's going to be a tremendous amount of stress that's applied to the knee.
Now, I've heard you talk about the kinetic chain. Is that what this is?
Yes, everything is attached. It's like your knee is not just like a free-floating agent in there.
Right.
It depends on the things above it and below it. And so if you're weak farther up the kinetic chain in those core muscles, then you're often going to have referred injuries down your knees, your ankles, things like that.
Okay, so you're saying that IT band or other injuries of the legs could be related to a weak core.
That's right.
Aha.
And we all know that the body is a complex machine that constantly transitions between rest and movement. And there are tons of processes going on behind the scenes that we're not even aware of. So, you know, when you focus on core training, it helps your body have the stability and control for the tasks of daily life, as well as the running that you want to do or any other exercise. Now, when I talk about core training, it's not necessary or even beneficial for a runner to train for strength like a bodybuilder. As a runner, you want to have more compact and functional strength. So a cross and strength training routine that's specifically tailored to the demands placed on a runner's body is ideal.
So you're saying not just any old core training or any old cross training will do if you want to become a more efficient runner.
Well, I'm saying some people do strength training currently, but often they work on more of the vanity muscles and not necessarily the core muscles. You know, the core muscles really aren't the ones that are kind of sexy and like flex biceps or, you know, like look at my abs ripple kind of thing. So sometimes you don't really think about all the muscles that go into the core.
But abs are core muscles.
Right. But, you know, if you can just do crunches, that's going to neglect tons of muscles. It's really not a well-rounded core workout.
So maybe you agree that core training is important. You don't want to be like a sponge. You'd rather be like that runner who has that firm, solid core that makes running easier. Let's talk about how to implement core training, and then Andy's going to give you some keys to consider when it comes to doing it right.
I think the beauty of core training is that the exercises can be done with little to no equipment, and you can focus on training the spine how to be strong and stable through common and specialized movement patterns. For example, functional body weight exercises like lunges are going to give you more bang for your buck than weight machines where you just sit there and have the weight partially controlled by a lever. So the more that you're using your whole body to build strength, it's going to affect your core. And we traditionally think of lunges as a leg workout instead of a core workout. But if you think about it, the glutes, hamstrings, quads, and hips are all part of the core. And things like lunges are going to train the legs, pelvis, and spine to work together. You're going to have to keep your balance, which adds challenge and demands that the abdominals and back be engaged. So, you know, it's just really not, you can't really isolate one part of the body to effectively strength train when you're a runner. It really all has to work together. And then if you think of adding reaches or rotations, that's further going to engage the core. And so that's, you know, one of the reasons why I think lunging is a crucial exercise for runners. And since running is an act of transferring body weight from one leg to the other, the more strength that can be developed from the core outward when you're doing different lunge patterns is going to create increased stability and give you a more efficient stride. And that's going to mean better running times and less wear and tear on your joints and tendons. So you kind of see the difference between a functional body weight exercise like lunges, mm-hmm. as opposed to just sitting on a bench at, you know, maybe one of those machines and just doing like a leg lift and just working your, isolating your quadriceps.
Not that we're trying to say that machines are bad to work out on, you know, or whatever. We're just saying if it comes to strengthening your core as a runner to get the most bang for your buck, you want something that involves more of a whole body movement.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, if you have a lot of time to work out and lift weights, then you can probably focus on
each little toid.
Yeah, on specific body parts. But if you're pressed for time and improving your running is a priority to you, then doing a more of a holistic core training approach is going to be more effective for you. So here are some keys to consider while you're doing core training. The first thing is to focus on correct posture and alignment. So if you have done any yoga, this term is going to be familiar. Figuring out correct posture is so much more important than any number of reps that you're going to do. So for example, if you're doing squats, your knees should track over your ankles and not extend beyond your toes. When you're in lunge position, your back knee should track under your spine while your front knee should stay in line with your ankle. So you really want to make sure that you're doing quality over quantity, because if you're using bad form, then it can actually cause more problems instead of do you good. So proper alignment should feel strong. And if you find that your form is slipping during exercise, then it's important to stop and either rest a few seconds and then reset with the proper posture. For example, if you're new to doing plank, you might find that doing a full plank puts too much strain on your lower back. So you can drop down to your knees and modify the position. So you're still building up strength, but you're not doing it with poor form and actually hurting your back. Another thing that's really important is focusing on holding perfect posture when you train and throughout the day. This is going to naturally engage your torso, lengthen your spine, and position your body for better athletic movement. So when you're sitting, make sure that you sit tall. And when you're standing, stand tall from your hips and have your shoulders comfortably back and down so your chest is lifted. You can place your hand a few inches above your head and then try to move your head closer to your hand only by lengthening your spine. And this is really what sitting or standing tall feels like. And if you focus on staying tall like this, as if your spine is hanging from a hook at the top of your head, and when you have this posture, then your abs tense in naturally.
So, Andrew, are you sitting tall right now?
No, I'm slumping because this microphone's not in a comfortable position. And I think also the more you can stand as opposed to sitting means that you'll use your core muscles better. When you have to sit, for example, try to stay tall in your chair at work and practice being tall when you walk to your car and tall when you're running and performing exercises. So I think if you can kind of keep that in your mind, staying tall in everything you do is one of the easiest ways to look and feel better. And, you know, it's going to decrease your chance of back pain and also train you to hold your abdominal muscles in.
Have you noticed that all of the furniture in our house is made for slouching? I can't sit tall on anything that we own.
Well, these...
Except these hardwood chairs.
Yeah, and I think our culture is kind of more of a slumping culture as opposed to a standing tall posture. I mean, if you can almost, if you look at somebody, know if they've been in the military just by the way they hold themselves, because they're trained to hold, stand at attention and hold good posture.
And not stick their hands in their pockets,
right,
too. We should work on our kids more about standing tall.
I'm sure they would be really overjoyed for us to harp on them about another thing.
When do you learn this, right? When do you learn not to slouch? Probably when you're a kid. I was in a boys' home when I was a teenager, and it was sort of like boot camp, except for teenagers. And that's the first thing I learned was sit up. You know, I had to sit up at all times, and also pushing your chair after you get up, and other little habits like that. Tuck your shirt in, and say yes, sir. But those habits I learned as a young person were very helpful, and I do catch myself slouching once in a while. But usually, the way I catch myself is I feel it in my spine. It starts to hurt.
Right.
We're just not made to slouch, are we?
We should not slouch. No. So the second key is to focus on tight abdominals. Really focus on not letting your abdominals relax. So you want to contract your abs and focus on bringing your navel or your belly button back to your spine. But don't confuse holding tight abs with holding your breath. It's really important to continue breathing through exercise motions and throughout the day. You really want to be well oxygenated as well. So keep breathing, but focus on keeping your abdominals tight. Again, if you avoid slouching or even overarching your back and sticking your butt out, you're going to have tighter abdominals. So focus on keeping your hips forward in a neutral position. And in order to practice how this should feel, you can stand with your feet hip-width apart, then reach both arms over your head and reach your fingers toward the sky. So if you're in a place you can do that right now, stand with your feet hip-width apart and reach both arms overhead and just try to reach your fingers toward the sky.
And what's that going to do?
As you do this, your hips are going to naturally move forward into a more neutral hip position under your center of gravity. So that's going to show you the correct way that you should be standing, the correct posture for your hips as you are running even. And as you do that, you're going to notice that your abdominal muscles come in a little bit.
Angie, when you run, do you try to focus on keeping your hips forward? Is that a thing you do, or do you just not worry about that?
I think it comes pretty naturally for me at this point, but you can do that right before a run. Stand with your feet hip-width apart, raise both arms overhead, try to touch your fingers towards the sky and just kind of feel your hips come forward. Then you just bring your arms right down by your side at 90-degree angle, and that should be your running posture. And then as you run, you're going to just lean forward, kind of a forward lean from the ankles, not just from the upper body.
Yeah.
And so you have that neutral hip position and you have that slight forward lean going on. You have your arms set and relaxed at your sides, and that basically is your running posture.
All right, I got to tell a story and you tell me what you think. I was at the Modesto Marathon. There was this lady there from the UK who runs dragging a tire. I think her name is Tire Woman or something. They spell it differently over there. It's T-Y-R-E, like the ancient city of Tyre.
Right.
But she had this harness that she straps around her shoulders and then a single rope that runs back to this tire that she pulls. And she was letting people try it, you know, just to see how much drag and how much effort it takes. So she let me try it. So I'm right in the middle of this race expo, and she wants me to run down the hallway and back. And she says, if you push your hips forward when you run, then the tire won't bounce. But if you just run normally, sure enough, the front of the tire will bounce up and down, up and down, up and down as you move. And that was interesting. That was like the first time I'd ever had thought about pushing my hips forward and leaning more into my run. I think she was all into the pose technique or something.
Right.
But it does feel different. I can't say that I do it now, but it did feel different to run that way.
Yeah, definitely.
So thank you for enduring that boring story. All right. So we're talking about keys to doing effective core training. Key number one was focus on posture and alignment. Number two is to keep your abs tight. And key number three is it should be difficult.
That's right. You might feel unstable, it basically is what I mean by this. The instability generated during core training is going to build better balance, and it encourages your core to stay engaged. And that's why it's important to do body weight movements. You can work further on your balance by doing movements that lengthen the body. You know, we talked about instead of just doing crunches for abdominal work, you can do three-dimensional movements, both unloaded, just your body weight, and loaded with weights. And adding that extra weight is also going to strengthen the core muscles and work on your balance. So when all your muscles from your hips to your shoulders work together, it results in improved strength, power, and coordination. So that instability at first is normal, and as your balance and your strength increases, it's a sign that you're getting stronger. Anyone who's tried yoga knows this instability and this difficulty. Some of the moves look pretty simple, but when you actually have to balance and hold that posture, it can be really difficult, and you really learn where your weak areas are, and staying with it is really, really a great complement to your running, because you're going to be strengthening your body in a holistic way.
So instability and difficulty are welcome when it comes to strengthening your core.
That's right.
So let's talk about some valuable core exercises. And Angie did put up a very helpful blog post that illustrates these. You can find that over on our website. It's hard to just talk about it and not show you, since it's not a video podcast. We're sort of limited.
Right. The key when you're doing core training is to start with more simple core exercises and then gradually increase the difficulty as you adapt. And add variety, too, because your body obviously is going to try to adapt to whatever you do, so you need to make it more challenging. So as you get stronger, you can do core exercises on a stability ball, a Bosu ball, or use a medicine ball or a kettlebell. And you can engage your core muscles while you're lifting weights, which is also very effective. Or, you know, add weights to your lunges, weights to your squats, things like that. And so some of the specific core strengthening exercises that I think are really good is plank. And there are many variations you can do with this. Then there's the side plank. And again, you can do different variations with that. Another one I like is bird dog. Later, if you want, you can Google these or look at our blog where we've got little illustrations of these. Push-ups are another good core exercise, and there's many variations you can do. That requires a lot of core strength to do push-ups. Another one's called Superman or dead fish. It's basically where you lay on your stomach. You lift up your arms and legs at the same time because you really want to focus on strengthening those back muscles. Often they get ignored when we think about core muscles, but the back is very much part of your kinetic chain and important for your running. Then there's bridge, and there's various variations you can do with bridge. Lunges, we've talked about those quite a bit. Squats, very important. You can vary your foot positions and the depth of your squats. And another great one is called hollow body or boat pose, where basically you're going to bring your knees into your chest and then you're going to extend your arms and legs while you balance on your glutes. Yeah, your seat. So, and that's a very important one, and it's very challenging as well.
So, Angie, you run a lot. You do a bunch of marathons every year. So what does a week look like for you as far as core training goes?
I'm fortunate because I have a really good yoga class that I go to twice a week. And part of that is we do some very significant core training exercises during the yoga class.
Yeah, I go to it too. It's a tough class.
It's very tough. So I consider that two times a week, you know, part of my core training. And then often during the week, I'll get down and do planks or some other type of core exercise. I try to do lower body strength training once a week, and there, you know, and that's lunges and squats and different things where my core muscles are engaged.
Our yoga teacher's name is Tina. She makes us hold half plank for how long? Like 5 minutes? It's miserable. And then you have to rotate like one arm to the next, side. It's not an easy class.
Yeah, I don't mind those as much as I mind the we start in plank and then we walk with our hands.
Yeah, up, down.
That kills me because it takes a lot of upper body strength as well as core strength. So, yeah, it's a challenge. But I encourage you to add some specific core training to your routine at least twice a week. It doesn't have to be like a long time. You know, it can be 10 to 15 minutes of just going through some of these specific exercises that we mentioned. Schedule it in. Make sure that you don't skip it. It's really going to help increase your running efficiency and help you avoid injury. And at first, you know, you may just be able to start with 30 to 60 seconds of each exercise and then work your way up. But if you focus on core training, it's going to help you look and feel better as you develop stronger muscles, more muscle tone, a flatter stomach, and better running form. So it's a win all the way around.
Well, now it's time for this episode's quick tip, and we're going to talk about winter, or I should say cold weather. Winter's almost over, I guess. Doesn't feel like
it. We hope it's almost over.
Recording this in March. So cold weather, running gloves. And the way this came up is someone asked on our Facebook page what we recommend as far as winter gloves. Keith actually asked this. appreciate that question, Keith. And we didn't have a top recommendation. I mean, we have gloves, obviously, but it's not like we're wild and crazy about any one pair of gloves we have.
Well, I think what complicates this issue is it just depends on what cold is to you. You know, where you live, regional temperatures make a big difference. What's cold for a person in Florida is going to be different from what's cold for a person in Minnesota, you know, and so it makes it a little more challenging.
So what we did is we posted it to our page and let our Facebook audience weigh in on what they recommend for running gloves, and got some good recommendations and some pretty funny comments as well. I'm going to read a couple of those. But then finally, Angie and I, after you and I talked about it, we finally settled down on what our opinion is when it comes to winter running gloves. And our opinion is infallible, so you'll want to hear that. So Ricardo from Florida, he says, in Florida, we use dollar store gloves about 2 days per year.
Well, I can definitely relate to that. I mean, here in Missouri, we typically don't get a lot of cold weather, so I can get by most of the year on dollar store gloves, except for this winter. So that has been the trick. Kelly chimed in. She said that she has some Brooks running gloves and some Champion running mittens. And she said her husband loves his Brooks running gloves, but hers never kept her fingers warm for the first couple of miles. And she says, then I have to take them off and hold them because my hands get sweaty. Essentially, your fingers are just individual frozen sausages. With my mittens, my fingers touch one another and get heat from one another. And then I can flip the top back and let them breathe when my fingers are finally warm. They're much better for me. So then she says, do they even make mittens for men? I don't know.
That's the key there, Kelly. Thank you. Yes, they do make mittens for men, and that would be, Angie and mine, a top recommendation is to get some convertible mitts. Convertible mitts mean that they have a little flap that you can pull back, and your fingers stick out, your naked fingers, and then you could cool off that way if you get too hot. I have a pair of camouflage convertible mitts that my brother got me years ago for Christmas or something, and I usually wear those when I go out and run on cold days because your body releases heat through the hands, right, and through the head. So after a couple miles, my hands start to really warm up. So I just like flip my mittens back and my fingers are sticking out there like radiators, letting the heat out.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I change directions or something and start coming into the wind, then my fingers get cold again and I just close the hatch on the mitten and warm back up. But they're pretty slick. I mean, they're simple. It's not a specialty running glove or anything. Just a simple convertible mitt.
That's right. And I noticed on here, like three people from Wisconsin chimed in, and they all recommended mittens, and they come from the mitten state, so I thought that was very appropriate.
They know their mittens and their cheese.
And a couple of them said that, you know, for really cold days, you can use those disposable hand warmers. We used to use them for skiing, but you can slip those in there to keep your hands nice and toasty for those below 0 days when you're out there.
Someone, Melissa, recommends the Nathan Ranger convertible mitt. Now that one actually has, it's like a glove with a mitten that comes over it. So your fingers would be separated from one another. It's better, I think, if your fingers are touching, right, skin to skin, keep them warmer. But who knows? I've never tried the Nathan Ranger convertible mitt, so I like the name of it. Nathan Ranger convertible mitt.
Ingrid from Norway says, wool is always best for cold weather. Woolen mittens or gloves will keep your hands warm even if they're wet from rain or perspiration. If you're very cold, you might use wind shelter too. Best regards from Norway.
Use a what?
Wind shelter.
Run with a wind shelter?
I'm thinking like something to put on the outside of the wool gloves.
Wow, like a glove that goes over your glove.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's like a shield that you carry and run into the wind with. I mean, who knows what they have to do in Norway? People are epic up there. I could see like maybe this corrugated piece of tin with some handholds, and you run into the wind with it as a shield against the wintry blasts. You think,
wow.
Angie? Can you visualize that?
A fertile imagination.
You know, it has a little slit for the eyes you can look through. Anyway.
I'm done with this.
Angie says she's done. She's leaving. Let's just have the Trevor Comedy Hour for this next segment. Well, that's it for this episode's quick tip. Hope that helps. And a big welcome to some of our new Academy members training with us for races this year and beyond. Nicole, Chris, and Ryan from Minnesota, Peter from New Jersey, Rebecca from Massachusetts, Alana from Ontario, Jill from Alaska, Scott from Wisconsin, Audrey from New Zealand, Devin from Nebraska, Nicholas from Kansas, Gary from New York, Dave from Idaho, Gaston from Georgia, Amy from Louisiana, Joseph from New York, Ann from North Carolina, Joan from Florida, Ginny from California, Mary from Tennessee, Ronald from Wisconsin, Marnie from Victoria, Australia, Joy from Michigan, and Deanna from Texas. So honored to have these folks as new members training with us and look forward to seeing what they accomplish. And we are celebrating our fifth year of podcasting here, and we are just so grateful for all of you that have listened to the show through the years and all of you that are new listeners. Welcome aboard. We're so glad to be on this running journey with you. And we always love hearing from you. So if you want to email us, there's an Ask Angie page on our site. And you can also connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. And at the top of the show, one of our listeners said that she received an email from us where we announced one of our new episodes that we just released. And that email prompted her to download the episode and go out and run and listen to it and get her workout done. If you'd like to also get our email newsletter and be notified when new episodes are released and blog posts and other things that we're doing, please head over to our site and put in your best email address into the sign-up form. And when you do that, we will send you a free audio gift. It's one of our episodes from years ago that's no longer available for free online. It's one of the funniest and most downloaded shows. Looking forward to connecting with you. Stay positive. And always remember, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way. Throw it.